96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walked through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know this voice already. It's Levin Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't have a clue what it is that you do at 11 o'clock, but whatever it is you do, I'm happy that you're doing that do and that you have decided to do the do with me. there are a couple days going on in my mind this morning. One of them is I see that the government has begun its free testing regimen. I want to say, you all are going to hate me for saying it, but I believe the way that we are doing it is going to turn into a cluster bump. And if you really want to know what I think, you should meet me at the watering hole. I'll tell you exactly the language I'd like to use, right? Here is why. They're going to test 400 people a day. Here's where the problem with that comes in. There are people that are going to be testing for things that are not safety reasons, right? So there are going to be the people that want to use the free testing because they're going to travel, because to go to a family island in the Bahamas costs about $240 or $250, right? They want to mitigate costs or reduce the amount it costs to travel. And so they're going to want to capitalize on an opportunity to take a free test. Every single day, I anticipate that you will go over the 400 people applying to take the test. So I have sat down, and I want to admit this. I'm not a doctor. Not a medical doctor, not a PhD. You know, I'm not even really anybody smart, right? I'm a boy with 5 BGCSEs, and believe this or not, I don't even have 1 in mathematics. That means you don't ever have to listen to anything I say at any time because I'm probably not intelligent enough to speak to you. What I do know, though, is that there is a mechanism of the government that exists. One that employs, I think the number is 5 or 6 laboratories as it stands. One that has about 80 different satellite sites across 12 inhabited islands of the Bahamas, with physicians managing the sites. I can't then understand why, if we fund that mechanism that I speak of, to the tune of between $36 and $50 million per annum, have we not retooled that thing to be able to offer the free testing to the population that we say we want to do in a way that has a level of efficacy that would make some sense. If we, and I want you to stay with me on this, if we went through the arduous task of enrolling 140,000 Bahamians into an electronic health record system, where all of their medical, everything could be monitored electronically by whomever their resident physician was, then why would we create a new mechanism for the purpose of testing? It just doesn't make sense to me. I, Levin Miller, already have a doctor, Shinari Bullitt, who I go to every year, sometimes twice a year. And the product says I could go as often as I like because my doctor should manage my care. Okay, that product exists. Are you telling me then that Dr. Bullitt is incapable of administering a PCR test? And if she isn't incapable, then why have we just not added this to the package of things I can go to my doctor for one time? I mean, wouldn't that make sense? And I can just say, well, Dr. Bullitt, I need to come in. And because quite honestly, we could argue that she's being underutilized on my plan. And literally, I wouldn't have to toe a line at the Kendall G. Isaacs Gymnasium because get this, smart people with doctor's degrees, lines are exactly how people are getting COVID. I'm a boy with a 12th grade education and I don't even have a math PGCSE. You don't have to listen to anything I say. But let me just tell you what makes sense when I put it in my very menial brain that doesn't have the capacity to have doctoral level of education inside of it, all right? We spent 5 years building a product that no matter where in the Bahamas you are, as long as you are a physician with the access code to access the electronic health record of the National Health Insurance, and this is your all baby, you know, this is the BLV baby, right? You would have immediate access to the status of whichever patient you needed the information for. So, if Levan Miller tested positive for COVID on the 12th of whatever day, or the 12th of January, 2022, I pray that that doesn't happen because Lord, it ain't the 12th yet. Hopefully that isn't prophetic. But when I'm tested by my physician, who is my physician, she can now enter that into my electronic health record. And now, because don't forget, COVID should give me other underlying issues as a consequence of being exposed to the virus. And if I have comorbidities, those comorbidities will coincide with whatever other morbidity factor that COVID creates. My physician would have a wonderful working knowledge of everything that's been happening with me over how is this difficult? Somebody's got to explain it. How is this whoever came up with this cockeyed 400 persons a day nonsense, fire them. They're terrible at ideas. It makes no sense. And you say to me, oh, we're going to just line them all up. But I promise you, six bear bet, there's a line of people from the door of Kendall G. L. Isaacs to customs. Six bear bet. Because that's what's going to happen. Everyone's going to want one. So when I won't go to Colonel Little Crooked Island and the plane ticket is $385, I won't save the $40 it takes to get the COVID test because I won't go see mama and I don't want to spend the $40. I am going to get on the line. And you know what's going to happen? We're going to inject classism in this thing because me who got cell phone numbers for cabinet ministers, I'm going to call them. Or me who brother walked into the door as a security, I'm calling him. Or me who auntie is the testing nurse, it ain't no way I need a COVID test. My auntie administering them and I ain't calling a cell phone. Your head, something wrong with it. Eh? And that is what happens when you build these awkward systems. Simply, I mean, I'm a 12th grade educated boy and I don't even have a math PGCSE. You don't have to listen to anything I say, but if by chance any of this, there are 6 labs, 80 satellite locations, and 130,000 people already registered on the program. It got to be a simpler way to administer COVID tests than to tell me that you are going to create some hodgepodge, cockamamie system that could only test 400 people a day. And you know how you know this makes no sense? This is a simple test. Did we not have a single day in the Christmas period where 589 people tested positive? Well, guess what? With your number of 400, we can't even test those, that capacity there. If we had 589 people test hot in one day, that would mean 189 persons on that day couldn't test. Precisely. So, I mean, when you think about the general mathematics, and I don't have a math PGCSE, so y'all don't have to listen to it. Once I say the word plus, minus, or divide, you can stop listening to me, right? But if it makes basic sense to you, it seems like it makes better sense to me to have access in Crooked Island, the same access in Crooked Island that I have in Nassau, the same access in Grand Bahama as I have in Nassau, in Abaco, in Eleuthera, in Exuma, and no matter where it is, there are physicians at satellite locations that are already paid by the public purse. Just let them administer the test. I mean, this can get more simpler than this. All right? So that's all I want to say. Y'all don't have to believe that. And I say, y'all could say, just leave and boy, I was on the radio making noise. Cut that foolishness off. Put it on 100 jams. I can listen to some music. But hey, I await the cataclysmic, catastrophic failure this will be. I await it, and I take in 6 bear bets. So if you don't believe me, I guarantee you that every day this program exists, there will be a line from the door of Kendall G. L. Isaacs to customs. That's my 6 bear bet. I put in 6 bears on it. Anyway, that's not what I'm here to talk about this morning. I'm joined in the studio by the one and only Bernard Evans. He is the president of the NCTU, and we're talking about livable wage. We're talking about, what is the other thing? What do they call these things?
All decent work.
Decent working wage, yes. And that kind of stuff. So we want to talk about that because, you know, this is a new year. Of course, you see, this administration has pledged to do all that it can to create a livable wage. We know that there was the MOU before the election of September 17th. And I kind of just want to know now, where exactly do we stand? Mr. Evans, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Bahamas. Good morning, all workers and potential workers in the country and retirees. Good morning.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, yep. Bernard and I also served at the board of NHI together.
Yes.
So
yes.
You know of the product of absolutely. Which I speak.
You were preaching right spot on. Right?
Yeah.
But that is part of the issue now and the recognition for wider dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
No one has a monopoly on good ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think if we expand the knowledge, expand the dialogue, then recommendations like what you're suggesting, and this is not the first time I've heard it,
mm-hmm.
and I've been also leaned to that why can't you use the model that NHI set up, mm-hmm. where a person's out their personal physician,
mm-hmm.
and now for continuity as to what's going on with that particular patient would then be captured and be treated, and mm-hmm. treated in the way, in the manner in which it should be treated and captured early,
mm-hmm.
if in fact persons are able to go to their personal physician. But again, this is where you have a lack of proper dialogue, proper communication to ensure that you get the best recommendations for what's going forward. And so you could kind of take care of the public in a much better and more organized and the best ideas come forward for that to happen.
Yeah, because, you know, I think we get caught up on always wanting to do something rather than doing what is best. Like,
yeah.
So we always want to be, and mind you, something good, you know.
Yeah.
I don't quote him very often, but Dr. Miles Monroe said that you could be doing a good thing in a bad place or a good thing at a bad time.
Absolutely.
And I think 400 people, yay, yeah. Right? We could throw confetti in there. It's a good thing. I just don't think it's a good time.
Yeah, you mean well,
yeah.
but it's your efforts are really, really, if you look at it, it could be done a different way and
yeah.
be more effective, more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so we're here to talk livable wage, decent working wage, that kind of stuff. Is there an exact number, Bernard Evans, on what exactly a human being in the Bahamas over the age of 25? Because I don't really think you need money till you're 25, right?
Really?
Yeah, you don't really need money. Yeah, your mommy, up to 18, your mommy's take care of you. Up to 21, your mommy still is kind of take care of you. It ain't until you get like 22 to 25 that you have to start figuring it out. You know, you should be done with college if you've been there. By now, you should have done get one of these job if you can get one. Yeah. It ain't until you get like 22, 23 if you ain't really figure your way. Well, people start saying, boy, what you doing with your life?
Well, if you got to look at how we live in the Bahamas and our
mm-hmm.
structure.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much the 21-year-old up to maybe even older than that, normally still at home with their parents,
mm-hmm.
all right, whether they're working or not working.
Mm-hmm.
But livable wage, as per the University of the Bahamas and the Department of Statistics and other NGOs, I think they came up with a ballpark figure,
mm-hmm.
that livable wage in the Bahamas, or let's say in Nassau, for instance, should be about $600 a week.
Mm-hmm.
That should be the livable wage.
That's 3 times what it is now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And in Freeport, it's a little bit more. I think it's almost $700 a week.
Okay.
In Grand Bahama to live. And when you look at the minimum wage, you look at the difference between the two, then like you said, it's almost 3 times less than what persons take home to kind of live a decent, livable condition.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to a friend yesterday, Derek Johnson from BTC.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about, you know, being happy to come into the year 2022. And he and his wife, Janice, as well, normally every Christmas they go into the communities and
mm-hmm.
Try to do some giveaways. And this time he said that they gave away some ham, some turkey. And he was taken aback when the lady said, well, thank you very much for this turkey.
Mm-hmm.
But sir, I cook on the outside and I have no way of baking this
mm-hmm.
this turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And He said, you know what, he wished he had the money at that time to just maybe get a stove.
Mm-hmm.
And but he and his wife decided to take the turkey home and prepare it.
And bring it back.
Make it and bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
But people will be really, really, and I know a lot of people do know, but a lot of people are far removed from the conditions of some of how our brothers and sisters live in this country.
Mm-hmm.
All right? I always talk the story that we are able to go to a food store and push around a big trolley. And, you know, the cashier, when you come to the cashier see your bill is $300, $400, whatever it is. And for some of us, there's no problem pulling out the credit card or the debit card and paying for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of Bahamians can't take a trolley around if only just for a ride.
Mm-hmm.
But they very rarely have a bill that large or mm-hmm. can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them really just purchase, unfortunately, they purchase suffer for the day. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow they're back at the food store to the mom and pop. To buy yet again another meal for another day.
Mm-hmm.
We have the luxury, for some of us have the luxury of stocking up food until it gets old. We forget what we have in the freezer mm-hmm. sometimes, only to find out when we're clearing it out what we had or forgotten. And so it's about resetting, and this nation of glad is a brand new year. I'm glad we signed off, the country that is, and the Prime Minister signed off on a decent work agenda. Mm-hmm. We like to talk about what decent work really means. And his commitment, and this administration's commitment, to begin the task of moving towards livable wage.
Mm-hmm.
This has to be done incrementally, of course. We did start with this first phase and first increment. And so hopefully by 5 years from now, or maybe even 10 years from now, we get even that closer. But again, we're chasing a rabbit. As livable wage today may be around $600,
mm-hmm.
10 years from now...
Inflation.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
So here's the thing. I know the government system does this thing where every year it generally pays its employees an increment of about $50 per month, right? Yeah. Which equates to about $600
a year.
Additionally a year.
Yeah.
Typically, I think the Ingram administration made that a salary cap of 8 increments, right? So, I mean, is there some way for us to, in the private sector, figure out how we... Because, you know, I never want to have private sector companies do what the government does, even though private sector companies work for profits and the governments don't. Is there some way to maybe, not half this, but let's just say, introduce a platform where private employers could do, let's just say, $30 a month annually up to a cap of 6 incremental cycles, in an attempt to get their employees, because there are people that have worked for the same minimum wage company for 10 years, 15 years. Some people have been on these minimum wage jobs for just as long as the span of a career.
Right.
Is there some way to legislate, or is there some way for the union to agitate for there to be an incremental increase annually for all employees 2 years and above? You get an annual increase of $30 a month. That $30 a month is allowed to run.
What you're suggesting is something unions have always been doing,
mm-hmm.
Agitating and bargaining for increases, understanding inflation,
mm-hmm.
understanding the children and the expenses of raising children and trying to get them proper education, health care, and the list goes on. So this is something we have been doing from our inception. As a matter of fact, that is the reason unions were birthed,
mm-hmm.
Because of the lack of income,
mm-hmm.
The lack of protection. Social securities and all that stuff. And so this is what we've been doing all along. So you asked a very, very pertinent question. But I want to set a foundation that some Bahamians may have heard and some may not have heard. But from a union perspective and from what our studies have shown, and we continue to keep our heads in the books and study reports from around the world. But I remember, and I could be corrected on this, but this mm-hmm. has been some time, but I think it was in 2014, I think it was a World Bank that said that countries like the Bahamas or quote-unquote third world or just above third world countries, but in particular I was focused on my country, which is the Bahamas, and it said that given the current system that we do operate now, it would take us 221 years to break even.
Mm-hmm.
221 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an asterisk at the bottom said that pretty much the way it is designed and the way we do business, we would never break even.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so something has to change. We have to have an about change, 180-degree turn, if we're going to change anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
If we keep crying to government for more monies, then you're going to have the private sector and person who says, listen, you all are the reason why the Bahamas' debt is so high, because mm-hmm. you all keep agitating for more and more monies. All right? That is the status quo that we keep getting, that every time unions fight for more and more monies, or more increases, like you're advocating now,
mm-hmm.
Then you would have the other side saying, well, we can't afford it. These lazy bastards, they all they want is more and more money. They don't do anything and all this stuff.
But I mean, isn't that because a lot of times the union approach is not necessarily as incremental as it could be? Like, a lot of times I hear the union talk, they talk about lump sum, back pays. And a lot of times I imagine people think to themselves, well, I can't afford to pay today pay. What you mean, back pay?
Yeah, but listen, let's take those words. I know when you have a short, maybe mm-hmm. less than an hour, but that's just those words that you used just now, right? Back pay.
Mm-hmm.
But back pay denotes that you owe me some money.
So, yeah.
Right? But right. Once I produce my sweat, my tears, and I've done my tour of production for you,
mm-hmm.
the law says you should pay me. But the Bible says you should pay me.
Yeah, but just
so
as,
if you didn't pay me, then you still owe me that
but
money.
But just as consumers need things like debt forgiveness, etc., I imagine there are times that businesses need things like debt forgiveness and that kind of stuff. And if you allow debt forgiveness on one hand, we could repent for the folly of our ways in the past, right?
Right.
Repent of our transgressions toward our employees in the past. And figure out the way forward, right? So sometimes, I mean, is the argument then too retrospective as opposed to it being foresight bearing?
No. But like I told you, and if we go back to, like I said, to the World Bank system, and what they suggested about the outlook of countries like the Bahamas in the 221 years, nothing's going to change when you have CEOs making or want to make mm-hmm. 200, 300, 400, 500 times the base salary of their staff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to change. That's a personal something, and the pride and the consumption of those who make these kind of monies, and they have the houses and the boats, and they deserve it, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard, really, to kind of feel what's going on down below. There was a show I used to talk about, Undercover Boss,
mm-hmm.
that when they get to sit and work side by side with workers, and not only that, they learn how their workers fared in their personal lives and all that stuff, they realize that, hey, wow. And they do make these compensation and additional payments and payments to the workers if you watch that show. And everybody mm-hmm. who watched the show know what I'm talking about. But we will not recognize these changes if, in fact, we don't have the kind of open dialogue and broadening and deepening our democracy so that we could put the best effort forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as simple as you're saying if we could have a partnership with the employers and see if they can make up a difference. Well, the employers would say, well, listen, if the government give me tax breaks on mm-hmm. certain things, line items, then maybe I could take those taxes and afford now or increase wages for some of my people to provide additional benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But this, again, calls for a proper dialogue, a tripartite dialogue where you have worker representatives, employer representatives and government
mm-hmm.
trying to get what is best for this country moving forward. I just want to say this now. You talk about reparations and debt forgiveness. Not reparations, but debt forgiveness. That mm-hmm. brought up reparations for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we believe the Bahamas, and I've heard, even though we have signed on with CARICOM for reparations, and I think item number 10 is debt reduction. I believe that is an action that the Bahamas need to continue.
Mm-hmm.
It is picking up steam. We've had some major banks or those financial institutions that were around back then or beneficiaries from that activity.
Mm-hmm.
They have come out and apologized. Even the church itself have come out and apologized for slavery and whatnot. But I believe that still needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of debt reduction or debt forgiveness for these countries like the Bahamas, because there's no way we can continue. I don't see it without it. And like I said, go back to that research that was done by the World Bank, I believe, I could be corrected, that says if we continue the way it is without any major thing happening, and I believe the major thing is debt reduction, so we can kind of clean the slate and start over.
Mm.
All right? And me who represent labor, I can't let 400, 500, 600 years of labor for free go. You're mm-hmm. talking about back pay.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's a lot of money, and our kids need it. All right? To kind of break even,
mm.
all right? So it brings me back to decent work. And we must understand that decent work create the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have a broad middle class, if you look at all of the productive countries, they have a wide, the Hong Kongs and the South Korea, they have a large middle class.
Mm.
And that middle class really perpetuate the engine and really bring about proper dialogue and take up social issues and right. to make sure those put forth, like what you were discussing.
Right.
So So we're hopeful that we were able to get to that kind of stuff. And you mentioned the MOU, and we're glad that the government has signed on it. And so far has been true to his word and listening to the unions and our recommendations as we move forward and implementing those protections for workers.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, so is there another way, though, Bernard? I mean, you know, I always like to think about, I know that there is always a formula, right?
Right.
The formula is to introduce a workable or a decent work wage, et cetera, or provide incremental relief via pay. But, you know, there is also the school of thought that says for every dollar you do not spend, you save the dollar, right?
Right.
Is there a way possibly that the unions are looking at the cost of living and how do they attack the cost of living in the Bahamas so as to ensure that where there is the gap falls with the livable wage, right? Because I imagine that tomorrow, if everybody in the Bahamas started making $600, the cost of cabbage will go up, the cost of cars will go up, the cost of fuel will go up, and that $600 will naturally translate back into $210. How then are the unions looking at service providers, produce providers, and people that provide labor for service, though, in the reduction of that cost? I see that there's now the reduction of VAT from 12 to 10%, right? How are these reductions in the society contributing, or can they contribute to what the employee, the worker feels his livable wage is able to do for him, though?
Again, if you look at unions, and I mean, I think I've beaten this enough over my years as leader of trade union, or even my own union back in the day, BCPOU.
Mm-hmm.
Our agitation, and we were able to sustain and negotiate what we call livable wage and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we have those protections on the union. But again, this gave me an opportunity at a brand new year, and I want to just show you something. Unions, when we talk unions, it's seemingly you want to have these negative tones that we're somewhat disruptive and we counter economic growth and whatnot. Our constitution allows for political parties.
Mm-hmm.
And unions.
Okay.
Via the political parties, you get to form the government.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it, unions have to be registered, has to be audited by a licensed auditing firm, independent auditing firm.
Mm-hmm.
All of its members need to pay dues, and a list of those members need to be sent into the government to be verified and sanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Political parties don't have such stipulations at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're not mandatorily monitored by the government or any other, by the people, I should say.
Right.
They're not audited, but they are the ones who end up forming the government.
Mm-hmm.
But unions, the tenants and all that unions fight for are the promises of all political parties.
Mm-hmm.
Decent work, we can provide good health care, good education, good pay, good wages. This is what unions fight for and are on the record of doing.
Mm-hmm.
Political parties talk that rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And so when the question, like you asked me this now, how do unions see this and what are unions doing about
it? How do they
this?
Agitate for it?
Yeah, and how do you agitate for it?
Mm-hmm.
All right? Our agitation come through the NTC, the newly formed, the created and statutorily the NTC, the National Tripartite Council, was done almost, 7-8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I stand to be corrected on that. But it does allow at least the framework for organized labor, organized employer, and the government to sit down and to come about and talk about and discuss in depth these realities about how you get a livable wage. Well, you do have a pushback from the employers who say, we can't afford this, we can't afford that. If you raise minimum wage to, say, $400 a week, well, you put me out of business,
mm-hmm.
which may in actuality be true, that it will put them out of business. And so now there's a scaling back. You have to kind of go by and taper, you know,
mm-hmm.
jockeying back and forth. And the government is saying, well, you know what, we can't afford the businesses to go out because we can't employ everybody. And their job is to create an atmosphere by which jobs can be created.
Yeah, where industry strives.
Right, and the kind of job, the decent kind of job. And so there's a balance you need to strike. And that's why when you started talking earlier this morning, preaching about the ideas
mm-hmm.
and who actually has come up with these ideas, if we don't broaden the discussion and bring everybody, understanding everybody is different and everybody do have a voice, whether I make $210 a week or whether I make $5,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
All of us have ideas that can kind of propel the country forward so that everybody can have a decent way of life, a decent living, and a decent wage in this country.
Mm.
It's not just the union. The union is the one who, I guess, are the custodians based on our nature
mm-hmm.
for which we were created. But also, don't forget this, the promises are made by the politicians or by political parties, all right? But when they get where they are, all right, we keep asking for the same thing that you say you're going to do,
mm-hmm.
all right? And then we'll push back and demonize however
but I ask again. This mm-hmm. is the question I ask again. A lot of the times, the labor unions are largely centered around increase in pay, increase in emoluments, increase in benefits. That is generally
protection.
Yeah, that is generally the axis of the message of the unions, right? My question is, how does the union, or is there a secondary approach? Like, can the union approach, whether it is in its tripartite associations, how do we reduce cost? Whether it is on the government side with reduction of taxes so that product doesn't cost what it costs today, whether it is on the employee side I guess just items or sometimes services do not cost what they cost today, and then on the employee side, which is hourly rate, right? Whether that is an expansion of hourly of weekly hours. Or a small increase in pay so that the weekly hours are reduced, but at the end of the week, it still turns out to be less for the employer. How do we reduce cost of living? Because if we can do that, then possibly, right, every dollar you do not spend was a dollar earned. Then possibly we may be able to attain a livable wage on a pendulum, right? So you do not take the people to $600. You take them to $310. But you reduce the cost of living by $200. And now we're somewhere near the very happy, destination of $600.
Okay.
How does the union see that, or how does the union see their role in the reduction of cost of living in the Bahamas?
Okay. Our role that we see and we have been doing for decades now,
mm-hmm.
all right? If you look at all of the major achievements have been done from the work floor, the recommendations that come from the actual worker towards their boss, if they would listen,
mm-hmm.
have done nothing but prove fruitful. Not saying that the boss don't have ideas and whatnot, but if they broaden and open their ears up to the floor and listen to the workers, they have made significant savings
mm-hmm.
because of the recommendations who actually do the work, who recognize what is best, the best way to do it, the mm-hmm. cheaper way to do it, mm-hmm. and the more effective way of doing things. Mm-hmm. All right? But that is what is called proper dialogue. That is one of the pillars of decent work,
mm-hmm.
the right for workers to be able to agitate for their well-being and for the health and the survival of the company they work for.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that is one. But let's go back to from the institutional standpoint. The ILO is an engine. It was the first that made it from the United Nations in 1900s. All right,
mm-hmm.
1901, I believe. All right, and the ILO have made recommendations that are international mm-hmm. in scale.
Mm-hmm.
Regional in scale and national in scale.
Mm-hmm.
If those recommendations are followed, those questions that you ask, how you can get to livable wage and how could we lower the standards of living, all those recommendations are made in the ILO. All right. Part of those recommendations are also part of the Bahamas Vision Plan of 2040.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if they are followed, again, incrementally, we will get to that pendulum, as you say, to begin the reduction on mm-hmm. livable wage in the mm-hmm. Bahamas, and also increasing the productive income,
mm-hmm.
all right, and an increased income into the homes of the Bahamian people. So it all goes hand in hand, all right? Those recommendations that are made, we live in a world, all right, that was set up by the capitalists.
Mm-hmm.
Those capitalists, in conjunction with nations from around the world, come up with recommendations that is best to survive in this particular situation,
yeah.
But we have yet to implement all of them, and if we did, we have yet to effectuate and carry to the letter those recommendations. Mm-hmm. But if we really follow them to the truest form, we will bring those reliefs that you are suggesting and that we all seek. All right, every family, every human man and boy, woman, whatever in this country, have the right to decent work,
mm-hmm.
have a right to a decent pay, have a right to provide for his or her family. okay? But it begins with an overall institutional recognition of it,
mm-hmm.
and all parties involved, all stakeholders involved, that's the churches, the NGOs, the political parties, unions, the employers, everybody must understand this for everyone and begin the process, the healing process, I would say, and this is a good time to maybe start a dialogue. For instance, when you look at BTC, and I'm not knocking BTC,
mm-hmm.
all right? We know what happened with the sale of BTC. And for those who may say, oh, yeah, he goes again. But listen, yeah, I'm coming from a different perspective. BTC right now is doing the reverse to the decent work agenda. When you have employees making $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month
mm-hmm.
and had pensions and medical plans and whatnot, and now you're taking them out of the workplace and you're replacing them with contract workers
mm-hmm.
who work in and making $1,500, $1,600 a month. Mm-hmm. on average,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have medical insurance. They don't have a letter that they could take to the bank to begin building wealth, like say, I want a piece of property. The bank mm-hmm. is saying, well, your job letter is saying you only on for a year,
mm-hmm.
so you can't do this. So when you're reversing all of that stuff, okay, you're widening of the poverty gap, mm-hmm. or you're lowering, you're closing certainly the
middle class,
mm-hmm. all right? And you get everybody now borderline slipping into under the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what's happening. But if you could pull the tape, and it would be good, I think, of this administration right now to say, you know what, let's pull the tape. And let's see these 5, 10, 15 items, whatever the shareholders' agreements were,
mm-hmm.
that you said you were going to do. And if you found wanting, right, not to take it back away, but you could say if you found wanting, if Cable and Wireless has found wanting that you did not do or did not deliver on these things, then now revert. Because that's a breach.
Mm-hmm.
Any contract that you breach now is voidable.
Right.
So you could now say, well, we'll take on management control. All right?
The government.
Yeah. And let bohemians run it. Because, listen.
Is that where we want to go back to, though, Bernard?
But why not? Let me tell you, if something is not working, if you promise me that you can give me everything.
Because it's now free market. I don't know why.
Well, it was always free market.
Yeah, but the government wouldn't want to. Why would the government want to create it?
Let me put it this way. Uh-huh. Let me say it again. Cable Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
Unalive is run by who? If I want to see the head, whoever's in charge of Alive, where do I go?
Isn't that the Rev Group of companies? Isn't that Cable?
Yeah, but where do I go physically? Their physical location.
Oh, I don't know where that is.
Right, it's right here, down there on, right here in Nassau.
Okay, Nassau, yeah.
If I want to see whoever's in charge of BTC, where do I go?
I don't know, Jamaica?
Huh?
Where is it? London.
It's not here.
I think it's London. Yeah.
It's not here.
Okay.
Okay? So when you saw... A sovereign nation has to look out for the best with its people.
Mm-hmm.
Remember now.
But they have free market enterprise.
But hold on, though. Understand what I'm saying?
Companies to do the
very same I understand thing. All that now.
Mm-hmm.
Free market, we've always been free market.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying to you is this. If they say, their report says it can take us 221 years if we continue to do the same thing,
mm-hmm.
all right? If we know that somebody, we made a deal with somebody, is not working, right? What we can do, put your head in the sand and bury it and say this free market and so on. But if there is something you can do
mm-hmm.
to change it, but shouldn't you owe to your people to check it out?
Hasn't the argument been, though, Bernard, and if you just don't know, Bernard Evans is here with me, we're kind of talking livable wage and decent working wage and that kind of stuff, but now you're taking me down the rabbit hole of BTC, so let's go. But hasn't it been argued that BTC has been more profitable to the Bahamas government over its tenure as Cable and Wireless, Lime, or whatever its incarnation is at this time?
Never.
Than it was as a government-owned enterprise?
Never. And that's what I'm asking. That's, see, what you're saying now, I would be glad for someone to do a probe and to really find out, do somewhat of an audit. It don't have to be a forensic audit or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just to see, just like you alluded to just now, has BTC or the government benefited from BTC more since the sale
mm-hmm.
or prior to? Remember now. One glaring thing I could say is this. Government is about providing jobs for Bahamians,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
And in that, if government could provide jobs that could bring people into the middle class, that is what government wants to do. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you made a deal that somehow took those people out of the middle class, right?
Mm-hmm.
Should a government be happy with that?
But what about the government's direct benefit?
Pardon me?
What about government's direct benefit?
Government direct benefit can't be, to me, it's a revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
if I put all the work and I have to go on your social services line, then the money that you're getting, that you believe that you're getting from your shares or whatever it is, you got to take that and feed me with it. What's the difference? When I was alone, you allowed me on the job and I was making my way, I could pay my way. So you saying it's better for you, for me, not for, for you not to get paid, but for them to give me the share and let me feed you. That is not what we want.
I have to think about that. Let's go to a break.
Yeah, I'm so tired. I want to think about it again.
I have to think about that. Let's go to a break. Yeah. Don't go anywhere. I got Bernard Evans with me. 323-622-3235-4316. 325-4259. Let me say it again. 323-6232. My numbers, 325-4316. Or you can call me on 325-4259. Bernard Evans is here, 422-4796, when we get back on the next edit break.
Hey, did you find the show interesting? Do you want to be a part of the conversation? Well, sponsor Unleashed today. Call 302-2304 or 302-2375 to see which package is right for you. Join Layvon Miller as he ignites the passion of the next generation by bridging the gap with engaging conversations and innovative ideas. Take action and sponsor Unleashed today at 302-2304 or 302-2375 and be unleashed.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with me. Listen, the off-air conversation was a bit hard as well. Bernard Evans is my guest. I'm Levin Miller. That means I'm Unleashed on your radio. That also means it's somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock. You can call Bernard if you want to talk to him. My number here is 323-6232-325-4316 and 325-4259. Let me knock a couple of these text messages out. I see some people still talking about some stuff that I talked about at the opening of the show. So they said, true, Levin. And the private doctor will be aware of the person with comorbidities. They will know the most vulnerable and those who should be put at the head of the line. We have to think of persons who are at risk but don't have a primary care physician. It's a much better approach. Levin, you missing that they have to register online to do the... listen to me. This is the Bahamas, all right? And until you all stop playing with yourself and acting like you all ain't no pirates build this place, we could forever be wandering in the wilderness, all right? Let me rescue you. If my auntie, and I admit, maybe it's happened a little different where Bernard them from, right? If my auntie is the one testing the testing, who in God's name could cause me don't get a test if I travel in tomorrow morning and I need one and my auntie doing the test? Online, what? I call an auntie. An auntie better don't tell me no because the family barbecue Monday. How she can come to the barbecue and he ain't test me Thursday or Friday? This is how we breathe the corruption that has become the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Pirates build the place and you all intend on letting pirates run the place. Anyway, so this here says NHI would have been a safer, simpler way. I agree. This says there is no cure for the pandemic, neither Omicron, the scientists around the world does not have the answer. The virus erupts any human. This sounds like somebody that knows a lot. Good morning, love your show. Can you please give some information as to how does one sign up for NHI? Oh, that's very easy. You go to nhibahamas.com and click the button that says sign up. Or, right, because, you know, Bernard and I were so intent on ensuring that this was a very labor, non-labor intense process, right? You go there, the sign up process literally takes 5 minutes. And one day later, you get an email and they tell you who your physician is going to be. And once you get in the packet at the first of the month, you become eligible on the 15th. If you get in at the 15th of the month, you become eligible on the first because it's a 2-week process. All right?
But Levi, let me also add to that too. We know now that they move into more internet-centric way of interacting. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have mom and pop who really are not internet savvy. Mm-hmm. I remember being in the airport trying to get back, and you had to get this. And I'm glad that they did away with it. But imagine you got an elderly person on their phone trying to get load up and download their status, trying to get back to the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And I found it very, very, very ridiculous. You know, I started doing it for one person, and you had almost 15, 16 people there saying, man, I can't get through and stuff like that. And so even with NHI, you do have still an opportunity to walk into if you're not internet savvy. And so we understand that. So just come on in and get it done. But I just want to say too now, mm-hmm. NHI is also a product of the labor movement.
Yeah.
And NIB.
Yeah.
So we've been fighting. We're still fighting for those social protections. And NHI is a continuation of it. And I hope they utilize it to what it truly can do. And
it can do a lot.
For the country.
Yeah. Yeah. This one just says, tell Bernard the livable wage calculated by the university was $300 per week. This just says, NHI is not set up properly. I know someone who was seeing their NHI physician regularly. They were admitted to hospital, but their files were not sought out from their NHI physician. Then what should have happened was when that person was admitted, their primary care physician should have been alerted. That primary care physician should have visited them in hospital. They should have, because not necessarily because a doctor is in the hospital means that he is a NHI registered physician. And if he isn't an NHI registered physician, we also went to great lengths to protect medical information with cloud technology security. So Dr. Joe Bloggs just can't go and log into a patient's records. They would need to get their primary physician on the phone. That primary physician, through telemedicine or some other feature, which also are allowed by NHI, would be able to then walk them through the patient's medical history based on what is saved in the electronic health record that we actually also put into place. NHI is, listen, this thing is healed the sick and raised the dead, I promise you. When will we accomplish a less than 40-hour work week, Bernard?
As soon as we are able to have that kind of dialogue, and I think for the benefit of everybody listening, including the employer, mm-hmm. They would realize, too, that a person who works maybe 30 hours a week is a more productive person, and family life being a very, very important part of our mental makeup and psyche mm-hmm. Allow us to spend more time at home, or even if we start a home or won't start a business, if we have it, you're able to do that. Mm-hmm. Progressive countries like France and Belgium and throughout Europe have recognized this and currently now living and working at about 30 hours a week. Mm-hmm.
Places, I think places like Iceland, is it Ireland? Ireland did it, I think, over a decade ago.
Yeah, a long
reduced
time ago.
Reduced the work week.
So
Ireland actually had a pretty decent policy, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It is a 36-hour work week with an automatic hour and a half hour lunch and I think a 30-minute lager break a day. Yeah. So they give you 30 minutes to go to go drink some liquid lunch because they know you need that to deal with your boss.
Right.
And they've seen production and productivity increase over the reduced work week.
Exactly. Recent studies, those progressive companies like Google and the rest of those countries, they've seen that if they reduce the hours or allow persons to come to work in the hours that they would like to come to work, and they've seen the production just went sky high through the roof. And so when is it coming? Again, through the NTC, the National Tripartite Council, I guess we can continue this. For the caller or the person who said that livable wage is $300 a week, I disagree, but I don't want to argue that. We know that we seek to get minimum wage to at least $300 a week, mm-hmm. but there's no way a livable wage in this country is $300 a
week. You're absolutely correct. Yeah. I see I had a call online. We lost him. You can give us a call back. 323-622-3235-4316, 325-4259. Let's go to the line, Kermit. Come on and call. You're on.
Good morning, Levan. How you doing?
All is well.
Awesome. Bernard Evans, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, sir.
Very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
The topic or the subject matter that you're discussing happens to be one of the most highlighted issues or topics that I like to discuss. Firstly, Bernard, from your vantage point, what is the new middle class in this country today, age bracket wise? What would you consider the new middle class?
I can't say from age bracket. Middle class for me would mean your income value. So I can't put an age on that. You may have someone who may be the age of 24, but their salary could be anywhere north of $4,000 to $5,000. And they could be considered in the middle class in terms of their income. But if I want to fly off the cuff, I would say the middle class would be persons 45 to about 60.
About 60. I think the same thing.
That's what I would say.
Now you're hitting exactly where I'm going with this conversation because you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
From an age vantage point, I typically say anywhere from the age of 48 to 65.
Right.
With the elimination of these persons who obviously are responsible for heading their families, responsible for the bills, responsible for mortgages, and so on and so forth, putting food on the table, so on and so forth. If you look at the systematic elimination of these persons within this age bracket being placed on the unemployment line, because we systematically see this, then secondly, to realize that most of the knowledge, expertise, and skill set happen to be with a lot of these persons within this age bracket, how do you expect the economy to prosper, to be strong and vibrant, if you're eliminating these people just because of a certain age number that they have attained? This happens to be the concern with a lot of persons in this country. You talk about the contractual worker. It also affects these persons who are also employed, gainfully employed, but now being replaced by contract workers, whom a lot of the insurances that they may have accumulated in terms of security are now being virtually eliminated, because in order for you to pay for it, you have to be working. A lot of our whole society right now is shifting because of the certain practices that seem to be what's being adopted in today's lifestyle. I would like to hear more from you as it pertains to what you see out there happening to the new middle class in terms of age bracket and also the salary. I hear you talk about the livable wage. The livable wage in this country cannot be no less than $450 for the average person working. But the employers will argue in order for that to happen, it's going to impact their profit margin and as well as their businesses. I would like to hear more from you concerning these two issues.
Thank you, Jeff.
Jeff, I agree with you wholeheartedly, but Miller, let me put an open invitation to come back again.
Yeah, because we got a minute. Yeah, we got 1 minute.
Deal with this, because that's a different talk. But listen, you're spot on, sir. But let me just say this much. Most of us, and I'm now, 57, 58? Listen, most of us, I think the majority of Bahamians who began to build wealth and have a home needed the assistance of a money lending agency, whether it's a bank or credit union, what have you, all right? And you got that loan based on a job letter. This new generation that is now being, or this new style of work environment where you have contract workers, if they don't have a letter that they can take to a bank or any money lending agency and say, listen, I do have some kind of security where I could afford to pay this, and they are turned down and turned away, you're looking at a generation that's going to somehow 5, 10, 15 years, and it goes around pretty fast. They can find themselves just like me at 40 or 50 years of age, all right, and don't have any kind of wealth or to be not even have a dwelling home. They would have to either rely on their parents' home, and I guess we have more than one child or we have multiple children, then that's an issue, all right? But the government has to look at it, and I would hope that employers, too, would look at this saga, that this prevalence of contract workers is anti-decent work, this anti-productive, and so we need to look at it, because you can't expect grown men and women to be working on a letter that only says that their job is only secure for 1 year. And then next thing you turn around, they're there for 5, 10, 15 years later, and yet you still got the same letter. That's a shame, and it is a disgrace.
We out of time, Bernard, send your shout-out because we got to go.
I want to send a shout-out to all of the workers in the country, like I said. Special shout-out to Mommy. Thanks a lot. Mommy's still waiting on my stewfish. And we're looking forward to this year, but Levan, I hope that your show will be the catalyst and the beacon for change in the country. We do need to broaden the dialogue. We are proud for the NTC and bolden NTC to where we need to go. But I'll see you next time on the show, bro.
All right, appreciate it. That's my time. You hear the music. I'm Levan Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9.